The annual Ashland New Plays Festival starts up tonight for a five-day run of events. Most of those events are the staged readings of four plays that have not been heard before, or heard much anyway. One of the playwrights this year is a repeater. Beth Kander was part of last year's festival with her play The Bottle Tree. She's back this year with a play called Hazardous Materials. And to talk about her work and the festival itself, Beth Kander, good to have you on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me here, Jeffrey. I'm excited to be back in Ashland.
It must be fun to have a repeat visit. I mean, you feel like an old hand at the play festival now?
Not quite. I was very surprised to be back so soon, but absolutely delighted. And it is fun that it's a small enough town. I have already run into people that I met last year when I was walking around downtown yesterday.
It is that small. Tell us about yourself and your pathway to playwriting. I understand there's a fair amount of theater in your family.
Absolutely. So my mom is a theater person. I come by it very honestly. And I grew up in the theater, rehearsals at a very young age, and throughout college and beyond was always on the acting side. But as sort of a more introverted person myself who was also a writer, it happened very naturally that if I wanted to keep going in theater, I was going to be more on the writing path than on the acting path. So I've been writing plays since college. And I think that I'm now finding my voice and very thrilled but excited to be at this juncture where all of a sudden stories are just all around and lots of writing is happening.
Does it pick up pace over time? Does it have a bit of a momentum you're finding?
I think so. I think the more you write, the more you write. And there is that sort of snowball effect where it's like any muscle. You know, I'm not the world's greatest athlete, but I do sort of think that there's a parallel there. You know, if you keep yourself in shape, it's easier to stay in shape. If you keep yourself writing, your fingers keep going, your mind keeps going. And I do think that there's definite snowball happening.
Can you be a tough person to communicate with when you're working? I can just imagine a lot of, like, you know, pounding on the keyboard. Honey,
Yes, I am often at my best when I have just the coffee and the computer and a little peace and quiet. But that's tough to sort of carve out for yourself a lot of the time. So I try to be as cheerful as I can when telling people, yep, I'll get back to you, but if I can please just get through this next sentence.
Right. So your mom, obviously having a theater background herself and running theater companies, was she a frequent reviewer and or critic?
Yes. Actually, both my mom and my husband are theater people, and they're often my first readers and responders. And I think the nice thing when you do have that shared language is I can take it on the critique side, and I trust and believe them. So I will say, tell me what's good, tell me what is working, what isn't working. And having someone that close to you who can give you not just support and love and everything you do is wonderful sort of reassurance, but actually realistic, yep, there's some there, so keep going, but here's what you need to address is incredibly helpful.
Well, that's nice to have it right that handy. Right there. Where did you sharpen your playwriting skills? You did some of this in college, right?
I did. I went to Brandeis University as an undergrad. They didn't have a creative writing or playwriting major, but I took courses and did the track there. And then a lot of self-teaching. I'm actually completing a formal MFA in creative writing now through Mississippi University for Women and their low residency distance program. But I think the most important thing to be a good playwright is to be a theater person. You can be a writer, but to be a playwright, you have to understand that medium. It's not the cinema. It's not a novel. It's its own art form. And so I think having a background also in acting and directing in that general world really informs my script writing.
So having been immersed in theater from, I imagine, a very young age, I mean, does the writing of dialogue come very naturally to you? And for that matter, when did you write your first attempt at a play?
My very first attempt at a play, I was 14 years old. And the nice thing about small towns like Ashland, I was living in one at the time, and I asked the local community theater if they would help me produce it, and they did. So I actually had my very first production of a play through Rachel's eyes about a young woman and her friendship with a blind woman.
Still available through Samuel Friends.
Right. But yes, I do think that having that familiarity helps with dialogue. But honestly, the number one thing that helps with dialogue is having a diverse collection of friends and acquaintances in your life. Because if you don't know any 16-year-olds or 75-year-olds, you're not going to be able to write 16-year-olds or 75-year-olds, no matter how well you know the theater.
Ah, that's a good point. So you cultivate people from a fairly diverse crowd of people around you.
Absolutely. And I still try very much so to always be genuine in my interest in people. But man, I tell you, writers are thieves and spies. And I definitely take a lot from the people in my life.
They are always watching. I noticed that. The writers are great observers of human behavior.
Oh, observers. That's nicer
than
thieves and spies, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you can have observers. So, I mean, are you constantly jotting things down on your phone or stuff like that, taking notes about people you've met and situations you've seen?
Yes, absolutely. I sometimes call and leave myself voicemails as well. Hi, Beth. Here's an idea that you don't have time to write down, so let me talk really, really fast. And but yes, otherwise, notebook and phone-wise, constantly jotting down notes that would probably, to anyone else, look like the ramblings of a madwoman, but they pay off later.
Are you careful not to check your voicemail on speakerphone in front of other people?
Mm-hmm.
Too many calls from Beth to Beth. So this is a second time around, as we pointed out, for you at the Ashley New Plays Festival. And let's get a sense of how busy this last year has been for you. Would you lay it out for us?
I will. Let's see if I can even keep track of it all, because sometimes it's actually easier to do it than to list it all out. But in the past year, I have written 3 new plays. I've been pursuing my master's degree, working full time. I have a show that's opening the Bottle Tree in Chicago this very week, in fact. And I had a baby 11 and a half weeks ago.
Wow. So, yes, so that probably, yeah, I was saying before we get on here, your Christmas letter is going to be a very interesting one if you have the time to make one.
I don't know if I'm going to add that to my writing list, the old holiday Hanukkah Christmas update. But I'll post something on Facebook. That counts now, right? That's
sure,
good enough,
yeah.
Right?
So when you were here having the Bottle Tree produced or staged anyways, a staged reading, you were already working on Hazardous Materials at that time?
I was. I think it's actually one of the gifts that the Ashland New Plays Festival gives to writers is to be here for a week and have the inspiration of this community and the sort of pressure and impetus to write while you're here. So I was in the mix basement hammering out the first draft of Hazardous Materials while the Bottle Tree was rehearsing. So the fact that a year later, Bottle Tree is opening with Stage Left Theater in Chicago and Hazardous Materials is getting a reading here feels really humbling and incredible.
We will get details of what goes on in the play Hazardous Materials by Beth Kander. She is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll also hear about the other plays in the New Plays Festival, the Madres, Edanev, I have to figure out how to pronounce that one, and Oberon Springs are the 4 plays at the Ashland New Plays Festival. Back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk more with Beth Kander and take phone calls and emails from you. That'll be in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Beth Kander, a playwright back at the Ashland New Plays Festival for the second straight year. Her play Hazardous Materials will get 2 staged readings along with the other 3 plays at the Ashland New Plays Festival 2016 through the course of this weekend. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the offerings at the New Plays Festival and the art of playwriting itself. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we were talking about rewriting Hazardous Materials last year while the Bottle Tree was being staged. Hazardous Materials is set in one place but 2 times. Explain what's going on there.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Tom Stoppard's play Arcadia,
oh, yeah,
which all takes place, you know, in one room. And ever since first encountering that play, I've wanted to do a one-room, 2 eras play. I think there's something fascinating about what a place can hold or hide, and that's what we get to explore in Hazardous Materials. So 2015, 1955, 2 stories, what do they get right and wrong? The current contemporary characters looking back on the evidence left of the past.
Is this a fairly well-established trend right now? I saw 3 Days of Rain in Portland last year, and it was the same kind of thing.
That's a great play, too. I actually think we've named the 3 that,
okay,
that I could
it.
List that have that phenomenon going on. But I think designers probably appreciate getting to have one space.
Because they get to keep the same set, just make it look a little different down the road. So the idea, too, is that you can have the people in 2015 talk about the people who were in that same apartment 60 years before. I mean, do they know much about them or anything?
It's actually a mystery. A Jane Doe has died in the apartment, and so our contemporary characters are trying to figure out who was there, and the audience gets to figure out along with them, but as they witness the 2 characters in the past scene, which one of them wound up in that apartment.
All right. So it's not just about the discoveries of the people in 2015 about the people 60 years earlier, but the characters also discover some things about themselves and each other, it sounds like, as a good play probably should.
Yeah, they do. A lot gets literally as well as figuratively unburied and uncovered throughout this process of entering a hoarder's apartment and trying to get to what really matters. We do see two eras of discovery and maybe a little deception.
Are there some things in your own life that inform the setting or the characters? Or please don't tell us your mother keeps all the play scripts in the house.
I will not answer that question in the affirmative or the negative. No, there are. I think that I will say the hoarder element is the least drawn directly from life. But there are definitely themes that each character faces that either I or someone I know well has gone through. And so I think it's a very human play.
All right. So we have three other playwrights at the Ashland New Plays Festival. Stephanie Walker with The Madres, Mike Teal for Ed and Ev, and Michael Erickson for Oberon Springs. What can you tell us about each of those?
Yeah. As far as the playwrights themselves, I think it's a lovely group. Everyone should come out and support them. We got to have a little bit of playwright bonding time yesterday and talk about our processes and our scripts and getting to hear about everyone's shows, which, since it kicks off tonight, haven't actually heard them yet. I'm looking forward to catching them all. But we have everything from a comedy to exploring a piece of history that's very little known to small town medical doctor tracking down a mystery. I mean, the range of topics within these four plays is pretty incredible, and I think it's going to be a great festival.
Do you get a chance to see the scripts of the other playwrights when you're on the way here or anything like that?
We didn't exchange them ahead of time. So at least how it played out last year was we got to sort of hear them fresh, and then we sent each other our scripts following the festival and were able to give some feedback after we'd heard it sort of clear-eyed.
So let's talk about the life of a play, because you were talking about doing a rewrite on Hazardous Materials while you were here last year for The Bottle Tree at the Ashland New Plays Festival in the basement room at the Mix in Ashland. But by that point, how long had some form of Hazardous Materials existed? I mean, from say, first conception on the keyboard to getting a staged reading or even a table reading, how long is that process going to take?
Well, Hazardous Materials is unusual in that it was still very early in its inception as I was working on it here. But I'd say, in general, it takes a good year or two from getting the first idea on the page to having something you're willing to share with an audience. But it's my favorite thing about the art form that a play isn't done until you have actors and directors and other brilliant theatrical minds contributing to it.
Just in terms of setting up the general, I don't know, framework of a play, I mean, what do you decide before you actually begin to start writing action and dialogue and stage directions and that sort of stuff?
For me, I need to make sure that there is, in fact, a story that's worth telling. So is this something that I would want to watch, listen to? Does it make sense? I mean, I am a pretty narrative playwright. There are, of course, experimental pieces and devised theater and all sorts of things that don't revolve around story. But for me, before characters, before dialogue, before anything else, I need to know that there's some meat on the bones of the story I'm trying to tell.
And how long a process can that take sometimes to think that one all the way through and not go through some dead ends and go, yeah, it doesn't work now?
Yeah, sometimes a long time. Sometimes plays languish until you find exactly what it is you're trying to do with it. The Bottle Tree was much further along in its life when it came here last year. I started writing it after Sandy Hook, so 2012. And sometimes it takes a while because the subject matter is tough, and sometimes it takes a while because you haven't really found what you're trying to say yet, but it's a process.
Is there a ratio? I mean, is there a drawer or at least a folder in your computer that's got tons of ideas?
Oh, my orphan ideas folder. Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally have. I mean, and some of them are a page or two. Some of them are a bullet point list. And some of them are 60 pages that I then had to walk away from. So, yeah.
Is it actually called the orphan ideas folder?
It is my orphan ideas folder.
Wow. So anything that get relegated there, you've agonized over for a while, I bet.
And I never forget them. I try to go back. So hopefully there'll be more plays someday.
Beth Kander is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, playwright, the author of Hazardous Materials, which will be at the Ashland New Plays Festival starting tonight. It runs through Sunday in Ashland with day and night performances of each one of four plays. Hers is one of the four. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions and observations about plays new and old and how stage readings work as well. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Having worked in some small theater groups, which I assume your mother's was, but I may be wrong about that. I mean, do you tend to think in terms of rather small casts? I ask that because Hazardous Materials has, what, four characters?
Yeah, absolutely. I do tend to be more of a shoestring playwright who wants to make sure that all of my works are as producible as possible. I was on the board for several years of Fondren Theater Workshop in Jackson, Mississippi, so I'm very familiar with small budgets, small space, found space. How can you tell a good story with as few resources as possible? But I do think that there's strength in big musicals with a ton of people and in small stories told with just four. I tend to land more on that side, but occasionally I will push myself into something a little bit bigger.
Is there some giganto rock opera in you or something?
Oh, you know it.
So you talked about using both your mother and your husband for feedback, and they're pretty good about both loving you and yet being honest with you about the stuff that you're putting out there. Do they get to see things before they go into the orphaned projects folder? Or, I mean, so I guess what I'm asking is how much more critical than them are you of your own work?
Oh, I am far, far, far more harsh than they are. There are definitely plenty of little orphan ideas that if I even so much as mention them, my husband will say, well, you've never mentioned that to me before. I'll say, oh, because that one, it's not ready for the light of day, not even for you. So they do see things earliest, but there's plenty that they don't get to see.
So then how helpful is it as a playwright to actually hear a play for the first time? I mean, even if you're sitting there saying it to a mirror out loud or something, it seems like having other people, other voices, other bodies portray your characters probably is a massive difference from anything you could do by yourself or just with you and your husband.
Yeah. Oh, it's invaluable. The same way that none of us are good proofreaders for ourselves because we know what we're trying to say and we're not going to see that missing V. It's the same thing when you're writing a play. You know what you're trying to get across, but until you hear someone else saying the words and see if the rhythm, the banter of dialogue between two characters actually works when you're not pulling the strings in your own head to make it sound right, that's the only way that it moves forward into something you can share with an audience.
You know, if it weren't for the fact that you're buying the ticket so you can see what's on stage, it probably is a lot of fun to watch the playwright during a stage reading just to see the kinds of reactions. You tend to sit there with your arms folded or something and biting nails or anything?
I try not to. I try to sit up really straight and be aware that someone might, in fact, glance over. And especially the actors, I don't want them to look and see me appear horrified. So I try to have a cheerful, resting face and keep it all inside. That's where my actor training comes in. But yeah, there was actually a great event in Chicago last year called Playwrights in a Box, where they would put a playwright in a public space, project what we were writing as we were writing it on a wall, and let people walk past and observe. That was a tough one to keep a straight face for.
Wow. So they were looking at what you were writing as you were writing it?
Yep, projected directly from my computer onto the big screen. So also, you know, you become real insecure about typos.
So you could see them too? So were they making faces at you or like,
Mostly
it's like
people
you split
were
an infinitive
nice.
Or stuff like that.
No, mostly people were nice. But there was, for example, one man who just stood staring at the wall for about 20 minutes watching each word as it came up. And I tell you, I've never felt such pressure to pound those keys and get words up there because your writer's block would be on display.
Wow. That's like boot camp for having people watch what you do. So I focused first on what it is to get the sound of your play coming out of actors. But then how different is it to add the audience to that whole process?
The audience is the critical final piece, and Ashland has great audiences. I was speaking with Kyle Hayden, the director of Ashland New Plays Festival, who I'm very fortunate to have directing my reading this year, about the fact that I've never seen an audience quite like Ashland. They're very cultivated as theater goers and have wonderful reactions and great comments afterwards. But I think for the actors as well, for the actors, for the playwright, for everyone, the audience is who you are creating this art for. So until they are there, it's incomplete.
Ashland has people who are knowledgeable about theater, obviously drawn here by the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, but they can also be fairly critical, I would think, too. So it's kind of like a room full of newspaper critics or something, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'd call it tough love. I mean, mm-hmm. I think they all want the plays to be good. And if you keep that in mind, any critique that you're getting is trying to help you elevate your play, not trying to tear you down, which is sad to say, not always the case with the theater critics or critics in general. But I do think that an audience member comes into every show wanting it to be good. And if they have a critique, it's because they want it to be better.
How different then, for example, based on what happened at last year's Ashland New Plays Festival, is The Bottle Tree that is debuting in Chicago this week as a fully staged play from what the audience heard as a staged reading in Ashland a year ago?
That's a great question. It's very different. It's, you would recognize the show. All of the basics are in place, but there's a lot that's been added, a lot that's been dropped. And some of that's directly from the Ashland workshop experience and then from working with the first full production team in Chicago at Stage Left that has been working with the show and having a dedicated dramaturg and director who are focused on the piece. It's definitely, I think, a tighter show. I think that it has a lot. It had a lot to say, but it says it a little more succinctly now. And it is. It's an incredible experience to get to see it grow over the course of that year.
So, for example, at last year's New Plays Festival, were there moments when you're thinking, oh, wow, that whole section between Gene and Bobby just does not, and I'm making things up here, but that whole conversation is just a big clunker and doesn't work and it's gone, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there were a few times that I was like, you know what, I can get to that next beat a lot more quickly. But the actors that we are given at Ashland New Plays Festival, since we have a lot of OSF actors and community members who read the show, they definitely also elevate it through their talent. So there are some stuff that aren't, wow, that was really great, but it was because of the actors. I should do a little trimming on the writing side.
And then by the same token, I mean, how much stuff in putting a thing on its actual feet with props and blocking and all that stuff, the movement of people around the stage, do you have to take input? Like, you know, if you could actually write me off stage for 2 minutes so I can not be on stage for just that long because I've been on my feet for, you know, an hour and 10 minutes, that'd be great. I mean, do people come back to you with stuff like that?
Very infrequently. I think in part because if you're familiar with theater, you already know to give folks enough time if they have a costume change or a something. But I think it's pretty rare to meet the actor who says, hey, can you give me a little less time on stage?
I realized that as I was asking it. Yeah, probably a dumb question. Beth Kander's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's one of the playwrights at the Ashland New Plays Festival. Hazardous Materials is one of the four plays at the New Plays Festival this year. And so I'm curious about Hazardous Materials. It's fairly easy, I would think, for stage decoration, because it takes place in one apartment. But then when you talk about the apartment of a hoarder, I can just imagine the prop people are going to be just beside themselves with trying to keep up with this when this play gets staged.
Well, and those people are much better at their jobs than I am. But in order to show that I care about them, I gave a few tentative suggestions in the stage directions that it could be a whole bunch of mess that's on rolling flats. So you push in the mess and pull off the mess in between scenes, or it could be projected. You know, I think that there are lots of creative ways to deal with that and still have the one basic space that you just fill and then clear fairly easily. But I'm sure there's something even more brilliant that I haven't thought of because I'm not a designer.
In the time that you've been exposed to the theater, things like what you were just talking about, though, the use of projections has come a long way. I mean, community theater is doing this in a big way now, it seems. So lots of more devices available to you. Does it free you up as a playwright, or is it still incumbent upon you to just, I got to come up with a good story?
I think it still has to be a good story, but it is nice to know that there are, even on limited budgets and smaller scales, a whole lot more available to theaters than they had in the past.
So, Beth Kander, how many plays do you have in some level of development at any one time? I mean, you talked about writing three more last year. I don't know if those include Hazardous Materials. No, Hazardous Materials is already being rewritten when you were here last year. So is it in addition to, it's three more in addition to Hazardous Materials?
Yes.
Wow.
So, yeah, I usually have, and some writers would say you're doing it wrong. You should focus on one project at a time. And I do think that for some people, that's the best way to go. I usually have four or five projects at some stage or another. One is getting the main attention. So when I was here, Hazardous Materials was my primary project last year. I was getting it to the finish line. And everything else was in that more sort of infant stage. And of course, now that I have an infant, I think some of my projects will stay in infant stage a little bit longer, but will eventually grow them to where they need to be.
Does it help the plays to all be being written at the same time? I mean, in the way that, you know, having people learn together in a classroom is helpful, that they, you know, you can use the experiences you've gotten from one to help out another one?
Yeah, that's a good metaphor. I do think that that helps. And I also just think when I run up against a wall or have that writer's block moment with one project, I bounce over to another one and I'm not stuck in the same way.
Hmm. You teach playwriting too, is that right?
I did. I taught playwriting at Millsaps College through their community enrichment series when I was in Jackson, Mississippi. And now I periodically teach workshops, and who knows, especially once I've finished the MFA, I think there will definitely be more teaching in my future.
When you teach students, I would assume you're going to hammer the whole part about make sure it's a good story in there first, but what kinds of things do you find that may surprise them, either the things that they're urged to do or the things they're urged not to do in the playwriting process?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that people run into the first time they're trying to write a play is they realize, usually once someone else helps them realize, that they're actually writing a movie. Because we have so much film in our culture, everything that we have on Netflix, everything that we have, what we see. So you assume that you can have 18 setups and 32 different places where people are having conversations, and learning to write for the stage is often the first lesson that someone needs when they're approaching playwriting. But I think people are also surprised by how many stories they have. I mean, theater is a venue where even something very small can become a big story in a successful play.
Have some of the works that you've turned into full-blown plays started as just scenes or sketches or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes an idea feels like it's going to be too small to be a whole piece. But then once you have either that story or a character that you realize, I need to give this character more story, then it'll evolve into something bigger.
I have not asked about the host playwright for this year's Ashland New Plays Festival, E.M. Lewis. What can you tell us about her?
E.M. Lewis, a.k.a. Ellen, is a great advocate for playwrights as well as a wonderful playwright herself. So she's the one who gathers us all together at the start of the week and prepares us for what the readings will be like. She moderates the talkbacks after each show. So she actually is there both for us and for the audience to make sure that that good conversation happens and we don't go too off the rails in any one direction or another. And I think that, too, is a real gift to have a professional playwright who is sort of a playwright's playwright and gets to be our guide for the week.
The Ashland New Plays Festival starts tonight with a reading of The Madres by Stephanie Walker. Each of the plays is performed twice, once in the daytime, once in the evening, Thursday through Sunday. Playwriting workshop on Saturday morning, all at the Unitarian Center on 4th Street in Ashland. Beth Kander is the playwright for Hazardous Materials. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. It's been a delight.